The second case of the day, Sycamore Industrial Park v. Erickson. Mr. Anaya?
May it please the court, counsel. I'm here on behalf of the appellant. We're seeking reversal of the trial court's entry of summary judgment in favor of the defendant. After reading the briefs and after having an opportunity to prepare for this argument today, it's clear to me that we have a very limited issue that's before this court for resolution. Is clearly discarded waste asbestos insulation exempt? Exempt from RCRA and CERCLA statutory cleanup liability merely by virtue of coming into contact with otherwise useful buildings or some kind of remote contact with those buildings. We're here to decide whether there is an exemption for clearly discarded waste that may be attached or someplace in close proximity to a building. Now, the relevant facts in this case are that there's abandoned waste insulation that covers, that comes into contact, that we argue isn't necessarily permanently attached, but comes into contact with abandoned pipes and abandoned boilers. According to the district court, and we're a big fan of the district court, we think the district court found many of the relevant facts, and we're very satisfied that we had a good reading on those facts from the trial court, that the defendant abandoned the waste insulation, abandoned the pipes, abandoned the boilers prior to the sale. That activity, that abandonment, that waste generating, that discarding of material happened, and we agree, prior to the sale of the property to our client. The abandoned the pipes and boilers are the ones that come into contact with the buildings, the useful building. We really don't really care about the pipes and buildings. This is not an action seeking to have a court order or a RCRA mandate removing boilers and pipes. What it is insulation that covers these boilers and pipes. We don't really particularly care about that, but it's important to recognize that that's what the material actually comes into contact with or actually is attached to. Now, we're cognizant that this circuit established that the standard of review here is de novo review for motions on summary judgment, but we also note in G.J. Leasing that this court also held that mixed questions of law and fact are subject to a clearly erroneous standard. In this question of attachment, cover, usefulness, attachment to otherwise useful realty, we quibble over the permanency. That's well briefed. We cite Mr. Kudrowski's testimony. We go through and analyze what the facts are in that particular in the case, and as we've analyzed it, abandoned pipes, abandoned boilers, and attached to the outside of it, or at least covering the outside of it, is a thing called asbestos or abandoned asbestos that has no other use. It's not part of a wall. It's not part of a ceiling. It's not part of a structure of any type like that. The court seems to say, or at least seems to imply, that there's some permanency involved in that, and we quibble with him on that, and we suggest to you that if you find that that's a mixed question of law and fact, that he's clearly erroneous on making that permanency determination, if that's what he did.
That's the wrong standard of review, counsel.
I beg your pardon?
That's the wrong standard of review. We are here on summary judgment, and
okay.
It's a de novo standard of review. The J.G. Leasing or G.J. Leasing case was a bench trial.
Okay. I understand that, Your Honor. But if we were going to go to that issue of whether there's a permanency with it, I wanted to argue that the court misunderstood the evidence that it had. And when it found that the
district courts don't make findings on summary judgment, counsel.
Okay, Your Honor. Thank you. In any event, since sometime before the sale to the plaintiff, the pipes and the boilers and the asbestos insulation had lost its function. According to the district court,
maybe you should just talk to us instead of referring your entire argument back to the district court. It is de novo review.
Okay, Your Honor.
So, how should we interpret what went on here? In what sense was the asbestos discarded or disposed of within the meaning of the statute?
Prior to the sale, Your Honor, the asbestos was discarded in the context of the boiler-based steam heating system that was operating at the site prior to and by the defendant only. through the winter season, the winter heating season of 1984 and 1985, had deteriorated to the point of being absolutely dangerous. We have witnesses that suggest that entire buildings were cut off from the system because it was deteriorating. Ericsson had gone out of, had stopped manufacturing in that facility in 1983 and had gone into sort of a skeleton crew. The boilers had to continue to work during that period of time, but they didn't have adequate maintenance and they didn't have adequate operation. They didn't have boiler attendants, and basically the old, very old system deteriorated.
I'm not getting an answer to my question. The system is no longer being used. So in what sense is non-use the equivalent of disposal?
In the context, Your Honor, of putting in brand-new systems, brand-new heating systems.
But it's still there. It hasn't been disposed of. In the replacement process, the old system and the asbestos that insulated it wasn't discarded or disposed of. It's still sitting there.
It was abandoned. It was abandoned.
Right, and that's a very aggressive interpretation of the statutory terms, disposal and discard. And I'm asking you to justify that interpretation.
I don't think you need to have a detachment, Your Honor. You don't need to have detachment to have it be discarded. You can simply walk away from something. In environmental law, we've discussed that as long ago as the Neurite case, when passivity, just simply turning a blind eye to something, does not exonerate one or exculpate one from liability. That material is there. It has no useful function any longer. If it was in the soil or the groundwater and it was left there, we would have a more conventional case. I grant you, we'd be able to argue about abandoning it in place in that particular context. But this is not new to environmental law. Passivity, simply going, I left it there, I've abandoned it. There's no requirement that you detach it. There is, however, and what we're arguing here in environmental law principles, the responsibility for cleaning the stuff up that you left abandoned, whether it's in the skylight or whether it's in the soil or the groundwater. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it's not detached is meaningless in environmental law context. If we were going to argue fixture law or we were going to argue real estate law, if we were going to argue ownership, I might suggest to you that there's something to talk about there. But one cannot, under environmental law principles, turn a blind eye to a hazardous situation and say, I just left it there.
So how much evidence was there that the asbestos was leaking outside or that fibers were being released?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. In context of that situation, we didn't move for summary judgment on CERCLA. At this particular point, we know that we've got insulation going out of the building. We know, and the evidence will show, that we've got chrysotile and amosite asbestos in the pipe chases through the building.
Right. And my question was leaking.
In this particular instance, Your Honor, under CERCLA, I need a release or a threat of a release.
Right.
And I think that I have the evidence that it might actually have actually been physically leaking. We can get that. But the fact of the matter
was that in the record, that it had been leaking or that it was about to leak?
I don't need to have it about to be leaking.
So then do you have any cases where a court has imposed liability under CERCLA or RCRA for asbestos left inside a building where there's no evidence that it's leaking?
No, Your Honor. That's not what the case I'm pleading to you. It's outside of the building. It's in pipe chases that run between the buildings, and it's possible that it is threatened to be released. It's unmaintained. It's been there for 25 years with nobody operating and taking care of it. It's been subject to the elements. It's the same thing as having a 55-gallon drum of some horrible chemical sitting on the dock. Yes, when it was first put out there, it might have been the integrity of the tank, but EPA, and I can give you a bevy of cases that suggest that hold that a tank with its full integrity is still a threatened release.
Well, let's get to GJ Leasing, which involved a plant that used asbestos for insulation similar to this one, had been decommissioned prior to the sale. How do you distinguish that case from this?
Let me count the ways.
Because I think that case gives us strong guidance in how we should rule on this.
In that case, the asbestos in that case was part of the walls, part of the building, part of the ceilings, part of the floors, not unlike the 21st floor of the LaSalle Bank building that burnt a couple of years ago. In between those floors, they don't have sprinkler systems in that building. They have 8 inches of wool asbestos. The fire was contained on the 21st floor, didn't go up to the 22nd floor, even though it melted the carpet, because of asbestos. It's perfectly appropriate that it's there. It's a structural component in G.J. Leasing. It was a wall. It had utility as a wall. It lost its utility, arguably, when it was converted to something else. When it was converted, when it was sold, it was no longer being used as a power plant, but it was still being used as a wall. The floors had asbestos in them, as you'll read in that case, and that still maintained its utility. As Judge Posner correctly pointed out, there are many roots to the decision, the analysis in that decision, but he cites the Florida Power and Light case, Your Honor. And the Florida Power and Light case says, when you sell a product for its intended purpose, that's not a disposal. That's the gravamen of G.J. Leasing. When you sell a product for its intended purpose, in G.J. Leasing, they sold the power plant. The walls had their intended purpose. The floors had their intended purpose. The ceilings had their intended purpose. It had asbestos part of the makeup. Here we've got trash. I've got abandoned pipes. They had no purpose. I've got abandoned boilers. They had no purpose. I've got trash. There's no structural component there. Monstrously different case. G.J. Leasing says that a sale can actually be a disposal. It just wasn't in that case. Because unlike the catalyst case that Judge Posner points out, there was no actual sale for the purpose of disposal. There was simply a sale. And the asbestos in that case stayed part of the structure, stayed useful. Here, there is no usefulness at all. It was clearly waste in May of 1985. Now, I'm eating into my rebuttal time. I can take more questions or... Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Ayers?
May it please the Court, thank you. Plaintiff's counsel stated that in his view the issue is clear and that it's whether this material, this asbestos that's simply a part of the heating system in the building, was never touched by the defendant, is somehow exempt from these statutes. I think that gets it exactly backwards. The question is, as a matter of law, does it fall within the ambit of those statutes? And as Your Honor correctly noted, the question is, was it discarded? Was it disposed of under either RCRA or CERCLA? And the answer is clearly not. This court in G.J. Leasing noted the problem of asbestos in commercial buildings, noted that there are over 700,000 commercial buildings in the United States with asbestos in place in those buildings. I would imagine a great portion of those are in the Rust Belt, including this area. You have old buildings that are converted to new use. That's what commercial developers do. They take factories, they turn them into lofts. They take industrial space, they turn them into office space. Asbestos was the insulation which was used before the 70s when it became noted that that was a problem. Despite the fact that the immensity and the sheer number of buildings in this country with asbestos in place in them, plaintiff's counsel has failed to cite to this court a single case which has allowed recovery under either RCRA or under CERCLA for asbestos which is left in a building.
What about counsel's argument that release of the hazardous asbestos fibers is probably inevitable if a building is left unmaintained?
Well, Your Honor, I think that may be the problem that they are worried about in 2008, but there is no evidence in this record that when this building was sold back in 1985, there was any release whatsoever of asbestos. In fact, there's not even an allegation in their own complaint as to whether this asbestos was friable, which is crumbly, or whether there was it was in bad condition. There's nothing in their complaint about that. Certainly, there's no evidence of that. And so I think counsel's, in my view, wishful thinking about what he thinks someday he may prove is beside the point on that issue. And I think that's an important issue, Your Honor. I want to talk about G.J. Leasing because counsel has made some statements about that case, about the asbestos being in the walls and being used for its intended purpose. That was clearly not the case in GJ Leasing. As you know, power plants have turbines, they have boilers. Those are hot machinery-laden facilities. And in that case, all of those components, all of that machinery in the power plant was insulated with asbestos. Contrary to counsel's statement, those weren't being used for their intended purpose when that power plant was sold by the defendant to the plaintiff or to the plaintiff's predecessor. To the contrary, this court in GJ Leasing noted that the entire power plant had become obsolete. It had been shut down. It was no longer being used to generate electricity for the defendant. And in fact, the defendant knew that what the purchaser was going to do was scrap all that equipment, tear it all out. And so I think the case, that case is even further along, our case is even stronger toward there being no disposal and no discarding of the asbestos, which was on the pipes and on the boilers and which was never touched by the defendant in this case. Certainly, as the Ninth Circuit noted in 3550 Stevens Creek, the other case which even addresses the issue of asbestos in place, there is an issue, there's a problem in this country with asbestos. And as that court noted, if Congress had intended CERCLA to apply to the monumental asbestos problem, it would have said so when it was amended in 1986. Now, Congress certainly knows about asbestos, and we've cited AHERA, the Asbestos Hazard Emergency Response Act of 1986, which deals specifically with the issue of asbestos in buildings. And what does that apply to? They limited it to school buildings. And contrary to what plaintiff's brief says, that act did not require that any asbestos be removed from those buildings. Rather, it set forth guidelines, or it mandated that the EPA establish guidelines and that management plans be promulgated so that it could either be encapsulated, maintained. If it starts to crumble, they can patch it. And indeed, in the deposition of one of the two partners of SIPA, he indicated that in 2004, when they recognized that they had asbestos, they hired experts to come out. And what did the experts do? They patched the stuff. They disposed of portions of it that had fallen off in 2004. This is not back in 1985. But they patched other aspects of it. So clearly, even if this were a school building, there would be no requirement that this asbestos be ripped out and disposed of, as they are seeking to compel us to do in this case. Now, Congress contemplated expanding AHERA beyond the school context to commercial buildings and federal buildings with the Stafford bill, which is attached as an appendix to our brief. Again, that doesn't even require, even if it had been passed, at most what that would compel would be management plans so that this asbestos in those 700,000 buildings, which were referenced in that bill, didn't become a danger to the public. Quite simply, what they are asking this court to do is establish a precedent whereby their subjective thought processes, and I mean the plaintiff's subjective thought processes, because they were employees and management of Erickson responsible for selling this parcel of property, and they decided to purchase it themselves. If their subjective thought processes could somehow convert this asbestos, which was never disturbed, never disposed of, never discarded, which simply stayed there, into waste, then these statutes would be totally unworkable. Indeed, in their own brief, they can't seem to pinpoint when this material was discarded or disposed of, in their opinion. At one point in their brief, they say it was when the property was sold. At another point in their reply brief, they say it was when the determination was made that the heating system was no longer functional, in their opinion. And that highlights the fact that if you're dealing with a subjective standard like that, as opposed to what the statutes require, action, they require action be taken to the material to convert it into waste so as to be covered by those statutes. Then all 700,000 of those commercial buildings would be in front of these courts, and I would ask that this court not set that precedent. If Congress intended to deal with this type of problem, they have considered that, and the Stafford bill was not passed, and so I would ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment. I will take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ayers.
I think the first thing I want to do in response or in rebuttal is that I want to make sure that we all understand in this courtroom that this isn't part of the monumental asbestos problem. This is not even remotely within that 700,000 useful buildings. It is 0% of those 700,000. It's an instance where it's not even a building material. It's left on pipes at an abandoned facility and an abandoned boiler system when alternative heat has been supplied prior to the closing. Objectively, we can conclude that it was waste prior to the closing. On the exact date, I don't know. I know this. The district court was persuaded that it happened prior to the closing. I agree with him. The fact of the matter is it was taken out of service, left there as waste. It had no other utility. Of course it was discarded. Of course it was abandoned. This building may have asbestos in it, and if this building transfers hand, this rule wouldn't apply to this building. The fact of the matter is that the new owner of this building may use it for its intended purpose, just like Judge Posner said in G.J. Leasing. The fact of the matter is G.J. Leasing is on all fours with our analysis. Who created the waste stream? Who created the waste stream? That's what it comes down to. The court in that case clearly finds that the contract for the sale of the property, which was at issue there, was a sale case. We're not alleging a sale in our case. That's an important distinction. It's a critical distinction. We're talking about RCRA, and we're talking about CERCLA independent of, and counsel likes to, or the defendants would like to kind of wash them over on both sides at points, kind of confuse the issues. But the fact of the matter is we're talking in this case about RCRA independently of CERCLA. Now, Judge Posner says, why can't the sale be a disposal? And he says, well, there's many routes to this conclusion. There are many routes to this conclusion, but the simplest is that the sale of a product which contains a hazardous substance cannot be equated to disposal of the substance or even the making of arrangements for it. And he cites Florida Power and Light Company. That's a huge case. In our environmental jurisprudence, Florida Power and Light was where Florida Power sold used transformers. They sold them ostensibly to get them out of their inventory. Some could call that a disposal, but because they were being sold for their intended purposes, they weren't a disposal. There's a distinction. Judge Posner says that G.J. Leasing's not a sale, not a disposal by the sale, because the building was being sold and it had utility. The walls, the asbestos, the floors, the ceilings continued to have their utility as walls, floors, and ceilings. Not a case about asbestos per se. The 700,000 panacea, the floodgates we hear about, and I'll conclude with this, is not this case. If somebody abandoned the waste and it no longer has utility and the subsequent owner doesn't take over the responsibility, then the seller who created the waste stream, just like Judge Posner argued in G.J. Leasing, the person who created the waste stream is responsible. If that material goes into the building and the new owner takes over that building, continues to operate the building with the asbestos, there's no waste stream connected. The cellars, there is no issue.
Those boilers were structurally anchored to the floor, right?
The boilers were on the floor, Your Honor.
They were structurally connected to the floor, weren't they?
I wouldn't say they were structurally. I think.
How did they just place them? They weren't anchored in any fashion.
They were bolted to the floor, Your Honor. Right. Those bolts could be snapped, and the boilers could be removed.
Well, the asbestos can be removed from between ceilings. Yes. That occurs in this building.
Yes, but those are structural components. In this particular case, this was all part of an independent system that was part of the building. There was no walls, no ceilings, no. We take out the asbestos at Sycamore.
So you would have.
We don't have a problem.
You would have sought relief for the cost of damage to floors if they were taken out in the sale.
I think Judge Corr was right that if it was part of the floors and part of the walls and part of the ceilings, you couldn't dispose of the asbestos without disposing of the building. Here, you could clearly dispose of the asbestos and have a perfectly intact building with all of its structural components fine. That's the huge distinction in this case. These are not
these floors in no way. These floors would in no way be impacted by the removal of the boiler.
No way at all. No way at all, Judge.
How about the pipes?
Pipes are the pipes. We can, as the Kudrowski's deposition proved, we can take the asbestos off. The pipes could stay there in the exact same configuration that they are right now. Now, I believe that you could cut the pipes and there's no structural problem. We didn't get into that evidence. They're not going up. They're not risers. They're not holding anything together. Not structural support. They run out of the building. They run through the buildings. They're up on hangers. They have no structural support to that building at all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed.